Morning. I'd like to thank everybody for coming. I'm actually on my way out to New York, if it wasn't cold enough over here. Let's see what's doing over there. So I'll see if I'm able to finish here a few minutes early. This way, anyone have any questions, feel free to get me as I run out the door. This week's topic really was inspired by the topic we did last week, as well as the week before. Last week's topic, we talked about the importance of Jewish names and weighing many different things. I'm not sure if people saw, I think whatever goes on in this share somehow has cosmic effects in the Jewish world. There was a video circulating of a Breslov Chassid who actually named his child not Nachman after the old Rebbe, but actually Nachman, Me'umad. And this is legit. There's a video of it, video footage at the Bris. I think last week's share would have a lot to say about that. Part of a name is the tradition of a name. The reason why that video went viral is because that's the first child ever to be named such. I'm sure it's a name and some expression, but not so simple to name a child like that.
What is na-na-na-na?
We'll give a Sharon Breslov one day. So last week we talked about names. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em vis-a-vis older parents, caring for them, taking care of them, potentially the tough decision of caring for them in your own home versus a facility, and many aspects in that. One of the issues we dealt with is my son, the doctor, a Jewish boy performing a procedure on one's parents, or really even just giving a shot, an insulin shot to one's parents. And that brought up the issue of pain vis-a-vis Kibud Av V'Em. Today's question deals with those last two issues. I came across this question in a Sefer Shal Tshuvos Me'ah Sha'arim, which is written by Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein of Bnei Brak, who's a son-in-law of Rav Elyashiv, and we'll see soon a brother-in-law of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And he was asked the following question. Okay, so we understand that there's a nice idea to name a child after a forefather, right? So Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov's children, Reuven, Shimon, would name their children after their forefather, Yaakov. The question that Rav Zilberstein received was, what happens if mom is against that? The almana, the wife of the deceased father, what happens if she tells her children, do me a favor, please, do not name any children after dad, because every time I'm going to hear that name, that's going to cause me so much pain, so much hakamas nefesh. It's hard. They had a good relationship. But every time that you hear that name, it's going to bring up, please, please, don't do that. What does one do? Especially if the father specifically asked, he put it in his will, please name after me. Now, I can't resist. I think I told some people this story last week. After share. I'm going to a wedding tonight in a hall called Ateretz Chinka. Now, I don't know, some people all pronounce it in more simple ways, Chinka. But it's some hall in Brooklyn. They say the story behind it was a parent had the name Chinka, and they request that you name all, you can name grandchildren after, their predecessor. And none of the kids want to name the name Chinka. It's an old Yiddish name. Not so popular here in America. Sorry, we don't want to do it. And the parents, other parent was very insistent on it. And supposedly they said, hey, if you don't name it, you know, there could be ramifications. So they took their inheritance money, bought a nice hall in Brooklyn, and named it a Teres Chinka. Now the name actually became quite popular. But supposedly that's the story. So here you have a parent who, putting in their will, name children after me, but the mother is saying, please don't. It's going to cause me pain. What does one do in such a situation? And I was thinking about this question. This question really is, there's unlimited possibilities of where the same type of shaila comes about. I'll give you another example. Right? Let's say the father writes in the will, which son should take over the family business? It's literally there in the will. Now, looking through my audience, how many lawyers do we have here? Talk about the legality of it. But let's say it's written in the will, they want this son to take over the business. But the mother says, you know what? I'm going to be in a lot of pain if that son takes over the business. I think you should give it to a different son. Now, Hilchos Kibud Av V'Em, the mitzvah of listening to and honoring one's parents. The father is telling you one thing, or the father told you one thing. I guess it lives on in his will. But the mother is asking for something else. And she says, you know, it will pain me if I saw this son is running the business. What does one do then? I'll tell you a third situation, but this I can't give you out the details. I know of a different type of family business. I know of a yeshiva where the Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva put in his will that his son-in-law should take over the yeshiva. Nothing to do. I'm not related to any people. Nothing to do with Chofetz Chaim. But there's a yeshiva where the Rosh Yeshiva wanted his son-in-law to take over the yeshiva. But after he passed away, after he was nifter, the wife of this Rosh Yeshiva insisted that her son, not her son-in-law, I don't know of any relationship issues there, but that her son should take over the position. That became a big issue. I heard the story from the son-in-law himself. And what ended up happening in that particular case was the mother won. The son took over the yeshiva, and it was quite, the son-in-law seemingly was a bigger Talmud Chacham, probably would have more of a following than the son, but the mother wanted that it should stay in the family hands, or that side of the family's hand. These are very, very touchy topics. What we'd like to address today is the underlying halachic issues involved in such a case. And I'd like to give over today three different potential approaches to this question. Definitely not so simple, but I would, you know, to my knowledge, this is the only tshuva I saw in print that deals with this exact topic. In fact, this tshuva doesn't quote any other real direct sources that talk about it. There's some, we'll see, there's a Beis Yosef which touches on this. So that's the issue or the issues for today. So I prepared this share, you know, earlier in the, I guess the middle of the last week. I went over it a lot over Shabbos, and it changed my extra thought in the topic, changed my whole perspective of how I was going to give it over. So I actually like to begin with Reb Zilberstein's psak. Zilberstein, this Rav, very, very chashuv Rav in Bnei Brak, wants to answer that one does need to heed the words of the mother. Even though the father wrote in the will, please name all children after me, one would listen to the mother. What's the rationale for such a thing? He based it on a tshuva from the Noda B'Yehuda. The Shulchan Aruch writes, this is Yeridea, Siman Reish Mem, I did not put this exact line in the Shulchan Aruch on your sheets. Shulchan Aruch writes, Chayv l'chov afil achar moso. This idea of one honoring one's parents is not limited to their lifetime in this world. One has to honor one's parents even after they passed on. Shulchan Aruch goes on to give some examples. You know, really any time a person mentions their parents, they should mention their parents with a nice blessing afterwards. Like the most common one, Alav HaShalom. Aleha HaShalom. Right? Upon her should be peace. Obviously we understand that they live on in the next world, and really anytime you mention them, that could be a schus, it could be a merit for them. So there's an inyan of kibud even after a parent passes on. So the Shulchan Aruch clearly writes, Chayv l'chovdo, afil achamosa. But comes along the Noda B'Yehuda, and he makes a very interesting distinction. He says, granted, of course, one has to honor one's parents after they passed away, but there's a greater responsibility to honor one's parents when they're alive. And therefore, the Noda B'Yehuda says, let's say you have sort of like our Shiloh. You have a parent who passed on instructing one thing, and a parent who's alive going against that. Who gets Kedima? Who goes first? Now we know the common halacha, it's a Gemara in Kiddushin. Let's say if a father and a mother make a request at the same time that you could only do one right now. Who comes first? The request of a father or the request of a mother? They're both alive. Both parents, a father and mother, make a request. So that the Gemara talks about, and we pass in Malacha, you listen to a father first. Because a father, the Gemara says, even a wife has a means of being mechabed him, of respecting him. Of course, a husband has to respect his wife too. But there is a higher degree put on the responsibility of a wife to respect. And therefore, the son and the mother have to respect the father. And therefore, the father would come before a mother. But that the Noda B'Yehuda says, distinguishes, that's only when they're both alive. But if the father passed on, and the mother's alive, and the father had a request, and the mother says against that, the Noda B'Yehuda paskins, he rules in such a case, you follow the mother, even though you normally would follow the father when the father and mother have a conflict. But since the father is no longer living, granted there's a mitzvah to be mechabed him, to honor him after his death. But that's a secondary mitzvah in terms of honoring someone who's alive, a parent who's alive. Very insightful, important halacha. So there's a din of kibud av v'eim when a person's alive, when a person passes on. But the Noda B'Yehuda rules that there's a greater chiyuv of kibud av to someone who's alive. And therefore a mother would even trump a father if the father already passed on. Yes?
When the mother passes away, does it go back to the father?
Excellent question. Excellent question. Yeah, if the mother would pass on, then yes, seemingly, I'm not sure, unless you tell me that the mother doesn't, it's not an active thing she has to do now either. So, not so simple. You know, what happens if they both pass on and they both have wills? Gosh. Right? Lots of lawyers' fees here. Yes?
Does that a mother can trump a will halakhically?
So in terms of Hilchos Kibud Av V'Eim, I didn't want to get into the legality of wills, right? I have counsel over here.
Halakhically,
in terms of Kibud Av V'Eim, a will, I'll show you soon, is viewed as a form of kibud. honoring a will is included in the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. At the same time, a will doesn't take, unless you start, a will doesn't take precedence, this note that Yehuda is saying, as a life statement from a mother. So the father said in the will, do this, but the mother who's alive says this. So the note of Yehuda says, the mother comes first. Older people come first also.
We're talking about, I'm not sure clear, we're talking about things in a will that are not, at the moment, legally binding, I assume. Right? So, for example, if there was actually a will that financially somehow transacted that one of the children now owned the business, right? 1 minute before the death.
Right, that's a different scenario.
Right? That's not going to be applicable.
Correct.
He owns it already. The mother can't say,
you definitely make cases quite complicated. Your particular question you're dealing with, can one, they'll enact the policies of the law before the person passes on. Not sure how that works legally, but in halakhically.
They typically have to work, otherwise there's a diminution.
Okay.
You can't trump that either. So
right.
That's how they all basically work, I believe.
Yes.
In one way, shape, or form, or another.
Isn't the whole point of a will so that the father makes sure that something is done, because maybe somebody else will counteract what he says? Isn't the whole point of a will to make sure that gets done?
Yeah. See, I was hearing your argument even one step further. Right? The person writes a will. When does he write the will? He wrote it while he was alive. So in sort of a sense, that's kibud av v'aim, a directive when the person was alive. I thought of such an argument. But nor does Yehuda, nor does Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who argues on it, bring that up. So it sounds like, even though you wrote that when you're alive, but you listen to a will really after the person passes on. So after the person passes on, the nor does Yehuda says, that's not the same degree of listening to something. Let's say the father tells you to do something for now and forever. So the note of Yehuda will make a distinction. To listen to the father now, okay, he's alive, he comes before your mother. But after he passes on, and then the mother would say different, then the mother would win. The mother would get him first. Very important legal step, this note of Yehuda. So Zilberstein writes the tshuva, he quotes his Nodeb Yehuda, and he's finished. Chora, the psak is, the rule should be that the mother wins. Now, so I did my research, and I found that there's a Rabbi Akiva Eiger that clearly argues with Nodeb Yehuda. And therefore, this psak from Zilberstein is not so simple. And this one, I don't feel too nervous doing. I saw other Talmidei Chachamim making such a point that this Rabbi Akiva Eiger clearly argues on the note of Yehuda. Rabbi Akiva Eiger is willing to rule that there is no difference in terms of honoring one's parents, whether they're alive or dead. A will is equivalent to a father talking when he's alive. There is no halakhic difference. The same mitzvah that there is to honor one's parents when they're alive, that same mitzvah in terms of a will would apply after they pass on. Where does Rabbi Akiva Eiger get this from? So he has a very interesting proof. This is actually on the back of your sheets. Rabbi Akiva Eiger finds a contradictory halachas. He says, firstly, I'll read from the top. In terms of this rule, im savaso imo aviv lasos davar achrei moso, if they command, parent commands to do something after they pass on, im tzarech l'kayim atzavam idin kibud. Do you have to listen to that will based on kibud av v'aim? Davar zeh tzarech iyun l'dina. He starts off saying, not so simple. Dimitzinu b'brayis v'perakam ha'kedushin mechavda b'chayim mechavda b'moso. We find this idea that you're supposed to honor them when they're alive, as well as after they pass on, which is the basis of the halacha that I read in Shulchan Aruch. However, at the same time, Mitzinu Gamkein Lehepach, you find the opposite. The Perek Yudbeis the Ksubis, the 12th Perek of Ksubis, De'enu Mechuyu Bekavod Achiv Agadol Acher Misas Aviv. Interesting halacha. After a father passes on, younger siblings would not be required to honor their older brother. After Kibud Eishas Aviv Achiv Agadol whom he didn't Kibud Av. Even though we know honoring one's parents, there are other situations, you know, that's part of Kibud Av. He based it on the Ramban that the reason why one has to respect an older brother is because that stems from the respect for parents. Parents, you have to respect one's parents, and a lesser form of respecting one's parents is respecting an older brother. But he brings the halacha that one wouldn't respect an older brother after the parent passes on. So that seems to be, why not? He's still your older brother. Because the chiyuv of honoring one's parents disappears after he passes away. So, Rabbi Akiva Eiger is sort of bringing, hey, we have contradictions over here. Is one responsible to honor one's parents after they pass away, which is a simple Gemara in Kedushin? He says, but you have this Gemara in Ksubas, which seems that it's not the same chiyuv after they pass away. One doesn't have to honor one's older siblings. Now look what Rabbi Akiva Eiger writes in the middle of the line, about 8 lines from the bottom. Well, it's zeh tzarech lomar l'chalek. You have to make a major split. The inyan shehu kibud v'gdula ba'atzmuso k'mo lomar avimori, my master, my father, zeh magvia kavod aviv, zeh shayek gam l'achamoso. To uplift the stature of one's parents, that's a chiyuv even after they pass on. To give them gedula, to give them greatness, honor, uplift their stature, that's a responsibility even after they pass on. Avol kiva lasos nachas ruach la'aviv. But to make your father feel good, ke'ein ma'alakto ma'shkio, to feed him, no'at saras aviv, to take away pain from one's parent, achal zeh l'chabad eishes aviv, and brothers, that's just nachas ruach la'aviv. That, we don't have to do Acher Misa. Rabbi Eiger is arguing, you know why you find this distinction in halacha? Of course you have to honor one parent after they pass on. Of course you should say, Olav HaShalom, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, whatever is appropriate. That aspect exists even after they pass on. But other aspects, obviously you're not going to feed him, but also to things that would pain one's father, things which are nachas ruach, that Rabbi Akiva Eiger is distinguishing, that does not apply afterwards. And really, a father wants you to honor your older brother. Okay. But that's a nachas ruach issue, Rabbi Akiva Eiger categorizes. That's just making your father, he's happy about that. But after your father passes on, even though, of course, we know that they see things and know what's going on in this world, but that's not a chiyuv. That's Rabbi Akiva Eiger's distinction. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger, yes.
You were saying that, I lost you a little bit before then.
Sure.
You were saying that if somebody writes a will, last will and testament, says X, Y, Z, the mother, his wife, could go and overrule that and say, no, we're not going to. If that's the case, then what's the point of writing first? Number one, writing the shtar to begin with. Number two, legal precedence, right? In Macomb, where you are, the legal precedence says that once you write a will, that's the final word. That means a guy wants to be cremated unless.
Right, so these things, in halacha, what we're saying, right, it's not so tricky, it's not so simple. Because even though you wrote a will, which a will would carry some degree, obviously, of halakhic power, but it doesn't necessarily trump the words of another parent who's saying it right now. Most of the time, you know, it should be shalom. You know, you don't just want all of us shalom when they're alive, when they're, you know, when they're after they pass on. Most of the time, the wife does agree with what they usually write the wills together. And usually you won't have a situation, hopefully, where there's disagreement. So that's the purpose of why we write wills. But at the same time, where there is a conflict, so that's really what we're measuring right now. The Noda B'Yehuda on the one hand says the mother or the person alive would actually get precedence over the will of someone who passed on. But this Rabbi Akiva Eiger is arguing back, is about to put down the argument, that no, that a will is the same as a person saying it right now, would agree with your statement. A will is binding, and that would make it that if it's a father versus a mother, the father would win. We're going to get to that. Hold on.
That's
what So this Rabbi Akiva Eiger wants to argue back. He set up these two categories. There's one category which are responsible only when they're alive, nachas ruach, to make them happy. Including that is honoring one older siblings. That does not apply after they pass on. But the other category of uplifting their prestige, their honor, that applies even after they pass on. So where does listening to a will fit in? Is it the first category, which wouldn't apply after they pass on, just making them happy? Or is it more than that? Or is it something which is part of their prestige that you have to abide by? Yes?
Is there any factor involved in any possible changes, any circumstances that would cause a different outcome between on the timeline, between when the will was written and when the father passed away, between when the father passed away and the mother said something?
Interesting,
or
you're right.
Between when the father passed away and when it's time to actually execute it.
You're right. You know, sometimes in these situations you're bringing up is the will was written 20 years ago, and, you know, things happen afterwards. So, again, I'm not the legal counsel. There's a lot of times people do redraft their wills and stuff, and you do have sometimes, you know, these disputes. That, oh, my father told me afterwards that he didn't, you know. Any good lawyer would say put it in writing. But halakhically, that's really part of what we're measuring over here is a will versus a directive, a live directive right now from the other parent. So let me get to Rabbi Akiva Eiger's conclusion. Rabbi Akiva Eiger concludes that you have to categorize, he himself would actually think, firstly, if it's just with his own logic, he would say, maybe this is something you don't have to listen to. Maybe this is like a nachas ruach, the first category. But he wants to bring a seemingly conclusive proof if you look back on the bottom of your sheets from the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef deals with the question like this. We know one of the most basic ways that one honors one parent after they pass on is a recital of Kaddish. It's going to Shul, and with a minion of 10 people, Kaddish is your sanctifying Hashem's name, and to bring about the congregation to answer Amen is a big schus, a big merit for one's parent. And Kaddish always through the ages, we gave a share on that, I believe, 1.5 years ago. Right? It's an important thing. Now, what gets tricky, it's tricky saying Kaddish while a parent is alive. You know, me'ikar adin, actually, I've seen that. Let's say, I know of a case, let's say a parent themselves is in avelos, but they can't get to shul. And there's no one to say Kaddish. Could a parent instruct their son to say Kaddish for a grandparent? Halacha is me'ikar adin, it's mutter. But what gets tricky is it's viewed as a bad omen. Not so simple for a child to recite Kaddish while a parent's alive. So really that even would apply when one parent predeceases another. One parent passed away before the other. Really, that child to get permission from the other surviving parent to say Kaddish. So the Beis Yosef brings down the bottom of the first side of the sheet. So mitzvah lomer Kaddish al imo b'chaye aviv. Of course, it's a mitzvah to one recite kaddish for one's mother after the father passes away. That's the scenario he gives. The mother died first. Could one say kaddish for the mother while the father's alive? The aviv makbid, even though the mother put in her will, I want you to say kaddish for me, if the father objects, kavod of kodim lekibud ha'em. The father's kavod comes before the mother's kavod.
So you don't say kaddish for your own parent.
So if the father objects to one saying kaddish for a mother who passed away, the Beis Yosef paskins, we don't say kaddish.
That's an actual request and it's written down?
That's what the case is. He said it in that tzava. Also the Lord tzava. She made a will. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a brilliant diuk from this Beis Yosef. Look at the Beis Yosef's logic. Look at his reasoning. The Beis Yosef says the father comes first. Why? If you would say like the Noda Yehuda, the answer should be exactly that. The father's alive. The mother passed on. This is exactly the case we're talking about. The father's alive telling you not to say Kaddish. The mother passed on, left a will to say, you should say kaddish. What does the Beis Yosef paskin? Listen to the father. But why does he say listen to the father? Does he write because of the fact that the father's alive and the mother passed on? He doesn't. He writes it because kibud ha'av is kodim l'kibud ha'em. Because in general, a father's kavod comes before our mother's kavod. So says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, let me just finish the thought. Says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, I see from here that Noda Behuda's reasoning is not correct. And really, there's no difference whether a parent is alive or a parent passes on. A will has as much legal binding as a person talking when they're alive. But there's an issue here. Here, the will is on the side of the mother. But the father is saying different. Anytime you have a conflict between a father and a mother, assuming they're still both married, right?
To each other.
The father would come first. So that's why the Beis Yosef Paskins, the father comes first. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva Eiger uses his Beis Yosef as a proof against the thesis of the Noda Behuda and saying that there's no difference between a person who's alive and a person who passes on. They're all the same. Just, we already know that a father supersedes a mother. Yes?
Why was this particular will even necessary in the first place?
So that was
this particular will.
You're right. I don't know. As they say,
Akasha
Funa Maisa. Kasha on the story. I don't know. You know, the mother wrote a will. Maybe she perceived I might have problems with my father later. She wants to, you know, preempt it. But the father is not going to have any business with it. And he says no. So here the halacha, it's a beferish Beis Yosef, paskins, that the father comes first. And the principle, which Rabbi Akiva Eiger beautifully proves from here, is really there's no difference between a will and a current statement. They're both on the same plateau, not to say that a current life Kibud ha'em trumps the request of a person who passes on.
What if one of the requests is not to do a mitzvah?
So that's Beferish Gemara. The Gemara tells us that any request of Kibud ha'em, if it's clearly against a mitzvah, one does not listen to a parent in that situation. But this...
It is a mitzvah. A parent said, don't say Kaddish. Oh,
good point. It is a mitzvah. But at the same time, we'll see, halacha takes into account, right? It's a mitzvah to do. It may not be a chiv.
Chiv, mom.
The way you call it. It's a chiv, not a chiv. I don't know. Right? If the mother is makbid on it, that, right?
Not so.
It's a mitzvah. Don't say chiv. It's a mitzvah.
Right.
Yes?
The Beis Yosef is, he's taking the easy case. Because the father's alive and he's the one who's saying it. If you flip it around, right, if the father put
passed on
just a kaddish, and the mother's still alive and says, don't say Kaddish, that's a much harder question.
No, I would say it's perfect. That's what I want to get to. What you just brought up, let's reverse this case.
Yeah.
Let's make it exactly the case we just said. Yeah. Right? Let's say the father passed on, and he said to say Kaddish. The mother's alive, and she says, I don't want you saying Kaddish. Let's reverse that case we just did. The halacha conclusively, according to Rabbi Akiva Eger, would be that the father comes first. You know why the father comes first? Because there's no difference between being alive and passing on. And a father always takes precedence over a mother. So therefore, it will come out the father would win. Which should therefore mean, back in our case, Rabbi Akiva Eger would paskin, look, the father tells you name the child after me. The mother says, it bothers me. And Hilchos Kibud Av V'Em, Rabbi Akiva Eger would paskin the opposite. He would say, you listen to the father. The No to Yehuda would say, you listen to the mother. Rabbi Akiva Eger would say, here's your halacha l'maisa, you listen to the father. So it's a major machlokas achronim what to do. But the father, at the same time, the father made a request. So whose request comes in first? So hold on. That is, I believe, the conclusion of this. So to easily say, like Rav Zilberstein brings, oh, the means to reconcile this situation is to go after the Noda Yehuda. He missed the fact there's also a Rav Akiva Eger. Rav Akiva Eger says exactly the opposite. Not so simple with the rule over here. So right now I'm comfortable. I'm going to get a little bit uncomfortable in a moment. I'd like to bring the psak of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Okay? So far, phase one, this is the psak of Rav Zilberstein. He wants the paskin based on the note of Yehuda that there's a difference between kibbutz of aim after one passes on versus when they're alive. But Rav Akiva Eger conclusively proves just the opposite. That they're equivalent. And there is no difference between the two. Yes? Anyone else? Okay. It's dangerous when I give the floor to anyone else. So I'd like to bring you the psak of Chaim Kanievsky. Chaim Kanievsky, as we know, is one of the great gedolim of the generation, and you don't want to mess with him. But he brings two points within this argument. I want to start with the second point first. If you look on your sheets, he quotes a Kesef Mishnah. This is in Os Aleph, in the middle of the page. This is over there, the Tshuva. On the middle of the first paragraph, he writes, V'ayim b'Kesef Mishnah, one of the Perushim, one of the explanations on the Rambam. The Sfirle, the Chiyamrinan Kavod Av, Mishal Av, Hanimil Chvoda. Very interesting halacha. Right, this we also touched upon 2 weeks ago. The halacha of honoring one's parents, what happens if it costs money? We talked about this. Right? Home care could cost a lot of money, especially if you don't have government assistance. Who has to fit the bill? So it's machlokas in the Gemara, but we paskin, kibud av is mishel av. It has to come from the parents' pocket. A child has to do whatever they can for a parent, but he's not responsible financially to support them. Obviously, if the parents can't afford it, we pointed out, the mitzvah of tzedakah would say a parent comes before any other charity campaign. But to honor one's parents, really, if it costs money, that doesn't come from the kid's pocket, it's come from the parent's pocket. But the Kesef Mishnah qualifies, that's in terms of honoring one's parent. Ava kedei l'shlo tzaro, but to prevent your parent from having pain, you have to be ready to give up all the money in the world to prevent the parent from having pain. So, Chaim Kanievsky wants a paskin. Very interesting way to look at our shiloh. What was our original question? The father says, name the child after me. The mother says, that's going to pain me. Please don't do that. Who gets precedence? So Chaim Kanievsky says, look what the Kesef Mishnah writes. Even in a scenario where there's no mitzvah of kibud al ve'eim. There's no mitzvah of kibud al ve'eim. There's no chiyuv, distinguish between chiyuv and mitzvah. There's no absolute chiyuv, responsibility to honor one's parents when it costs money. But at the same time, if it's taking away pain from them, or you are actively being mitzayer them, that you can't do, and that you would have to give up whatever money to prevent that. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, I see the principle of tsar in honoring one, honoring or potentially dishonoring parents supersedes the regular din of Kivat Alva'im. So Chaim therefore wants the paskin that even though the father said, honor me, naming after me is Kivat Alva'im, same time, listening to a mother, that's tsar. Tsar supersedes kibud al ve'eim. That's where Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky wants the paskim. A different approach, he doesn't bring in this note of Yehuda, it's his brother-in-law who brought it in. But he says, the conclusion should be that you should listen to the mother, because I have a proof from a Kesef Mishnah. That's what Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky writes. So I did quite a bit of research over Shabbos. And I think it's interesting that Reb Chaim decided to quote one of the Peirushim on the Rambam in the Kesef Mishnah, and he didn't quote the Shulchan Aruch. I'll tell you why. Shulchan Aruch writes like this. This is Shulchan Aruch, it's not on your sheets. I told you I came across it over Shabbos. Simen Yerodea, Simen Reish Mem, Hilchos Kibud Al Ve'eim. Sif Ches. Ad Heichem Kibud Al Ve'eim. Shulchan Aruch writes, how far does Kibud Al Ve'eim go? I feel not lo kishel zehuvim shelo v'yashlichu b'fon of liyam. Even the parent, fortunately, sounds like they go crazy, and they take your wallet full of gold coins and throw it into the ocean. Liyachlimim v'yitzar b'fneim. You shouldn't actively in front of their face pain them and scream at them. Well, yichas kenegdom. You shouldn't get all angry under them. El yikabel gzeres akasav v'yishto. Look, accept God's will of honoring one's parents, and keep quiet. Pretty tough mitzvah to do, obviously. That's the machaber. Comes the Ramah, the Yesh Omrim, Dimrotz Lizok Moos Shel Ben Liam. Hey, if your father wants to throw your money into the sea, the Yachalom Noah, right? If they still want to embarrass you, that's different. But if they want to throw your money into the sea, you could prevent them from doing that in any possible way. Maybe not hitting them. But you could scream at them to prevent that. Why? Because the halacha we mentioned before. You're only supposed to honor them with their money. There's no difference when it comes to between kibud and tsar. The Ramah is paskening over here. The halacha is not like that Kesef Mishnah. The Ramah is saying, we don't say, give up all your money in the world, not for your parents to be mitzar. No. If they're throwing your money away, they're literally taking your money and throwing it away, the Ramah says, again, Chas v'Shalom, anyone who has this situation, please speak to a local rabbi, how about to do this? You know, obviously this is a sensitive topic. But the Ramah is paskening, if they're throwing away your money, you could prevent them, you could be mitzayer them, scream at them, the kid's money.
But it's not yet.
No. The kid works, he has money. I'm not a kid anymore. Kid has money. So, the parents are throwing away the kid's money, right. It's not their money, which the kid already has his tentacles on. No, I'm not talking about that. Right? It's a kid's own money that he acquired as an adult. The parent is literally taking his wallet and throwing it into the sea. So the Ramah paskens, you're allowed to verbally do whatever you need to do to get your money back. You're allowed to do that. What is that? And the Ramah spells it out. There's no difference between honoring one's parents and being mitzayer. It's all the same. Even goes a step further. The Shach and the Bach, commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, say that even the first opinion agrees to this. They just say, look, since you could get the money out of them anyway, because halachically, you go to a Beis Din, they would say, Kibud Av is only Mishal Av. It's from the parents have to pay it, and you get your money back, so therefore you shouldn't say anything if you don't have to. But in theory, they say if there's no way to get it back, right, there's no Beis Din's going to award it to you, then you could stand up against them. So I was quite surprised, again, la nias daiti, I'm quite nervous saying such a statement, but this psak from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, based on the Kesef Mishnah, I don't know. You look at the Shulchan Aruch, you look at the Ramah, he clearly paskins not like that Kesef Mishnah. One doesn't have to give up all their money to prevent the parent from tzar. We don't paskin that way. We don't rule that way. Shulchan Aruch goes against it. Fair Shulchan Aruch. And even the Machaber, the Shach and Bach said, would agree to that. So I think it's Chaim specifically went to the Kesef Mishnah. Kesef Mishnah says that. Okay, but the Ramah definitely doesn't say that. And even the Machaber, the Shach and Bach don't learn that way. So, I don't know. Next time someone's in Bnei Brak, please pose this question. But Rav Chaim makes another argument. Chaim brings a shach, which is also on your sheets. Chaim wants, as a second proof to his position, that back to our case, the father's will to name after him versus the mother's sentiment, please don't, that the mother would win. He brings a second proof to that from a shach on your page. Shulchan Aruch writes that Mamzer Chayiv Bekavod Aviv Umoro Afilo Haya Aviv Rasha Ba'o Avera Mechavdo Umisyar Mimeno. Interesting halacha. A child born out of an illicit relationship, Mamzer, obviously, by then the fact he has that status, means his father did a pretty major sin. Nevertheless, the Mechaber writes that one does have to honor that parent. Hagah. The Ramah argues, sounds like an interesting machlokes between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. The Ramah writes, Yesh omrim de'enu mechuyev l'chabid aviv rasha el imkein el satshuva. Ramah says that one wouldn't have a responsibility to honor that parent unless the parent did tshuva. Okay, obviously, a sad situation. Again, we shouldn't come to such scenarios, but we want to bring out a principle from here.
Can you repeat that?
Yes.
The father
lived with an erva, okay, someone who he's not allowed to be with, and produced a child.
So what's that got
to do? That child, we'll get there. Hold on, relax. That child born from that union, the machlokas is, does one, that child, have to honor the parent or not? Machaber says you do. Ramah says you don't. Unless the father did tshuva, you don't have to honor him. The shach over here on that second opinion writes, even though one doesn't have to honor a father in that scenario, mihu afal pishen mechuyv l'chvodo asad l'tzaro. Even though you don't have to honor a parent in that scenario, but you do have to make sure not to pain them. Be also to mitzare them. Zokter B'chaim Kanievsky, what do you see from here? Even a scenario where there's no kibud av v'eim, there still is tsar of a parent. There's regular kibud honoring a parent, and there's another level paining a parent. So even in a scenario where there's no mitzvah kibud av v'eim, the father did an Avera, which cast him out of that mitzvah. But he can't cast him out of the mitzvah of not paining a parent. So I see the mitzvah of sort of paining a parent, not paining a parent, protecting a parent, is greater than the mitzvah of honoring a parent. So therefore, Chaim wants to argue again, back to our scenario, father's will says name after me, mother says don't. Granted, the father would be a mitzvah of kibud av va'em, but I see greater than the mitzvah of kibud av va'em is a mitzvah not to pain a parent. So once again, seemingly a proof to our question. Except on this also, it's not so simple. The next words in that shach are Kidel Kamon Simon Reish Mem Alf Sif Dalad Vehei. The shach bases this idea on something the Shulchan Aruch writes later. Okay, what does the Shulchan Aruch write later? He writes in Dal Vehei that, let's say a parent is our absolute Rishayim, wicked people, even if they're being taken out to be killed by Beis Din, so one can't hit or curse their parents. Or similarly, a parent does an avera which deserves, in the times of Beis Din, malchus, lashes, and the kid happens to work for Beis Din. He's the chief. Yeah, right. Or nowadays, I don't know, where's it, Australia, where they still do the bonging, whatever, huh? Flogging. Yeah. So the halacha is you shouldn't be the one to do it. Because you have to be careful not to hurt, inflict a wound on one's parents. So, that's interesting. Hold on. That's interesting. The Shach is comparing this halacha, that even when there's no mitzvah of kibud av va'em, but there's still a mitzvah not to be mitzayer them. The Shach is comparing that to this halacha later on, where one is not allowed to curse or hurt one parent, even where they're Risham Gemum, about taken out to be killed. Now, seemingly there's a difference between physically hurting them and doing something which would pain them. Are those two things exactly the same? When the Shach says to be mitzayer them, to what degree of mitzayer them does he mean? And I found there's a Birke Yosef, which is the Chidah. Just told a story about him the other day. The Chidah writes, he says, when you look at the language the Shulchan Aruch uses later on, he specifically uses the Lashon, it's also to hit them. Everywhere else in the Shulchan Aruch, we talk about honoring one's parents. The Birkei Yosef brings down such an idea that there's a difference between the two. There's a difference between hitting a parent and honoring one's parent. Makeh. You're hitting them. Now, especially in our case, let's even talk about how is the child, let's say he named his son after his father, how is he painting his mother? In a very indirect way. Because he gave a name to his child, the same name as his father, his mother will experience some pangs of hurt, agony. That's a very indirect thing. It's not the same as an executioner hitting them with lashes. So once again, not so simple. And really, the Shach himself, we brought as a proof earlier that supported the position of the Ramah, but there is no difference between Kavod and Tsar. They're on the same plateau. So even this Psak from Chaim Kanievsky, if you want to view that there's Chaim's idea that there's a higher form of kibud av va'em when it comes to be mitzayer them, to pain them, versus just honoring them, it's not so simple. So I'd like to bring a third approach, which is actually from, I guess, the realm of Musar, and none other than the Alter of Slobodka, the head of the famous Slobodka school, which happens to be, I guess, we trace our roots to. There's a very interesting medrash from this past week's parsha, Parshios, that when Hashem came to Moshe, said, I want you to be the one to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. Moshe refuses. And the medrash depicts, it went on for days and days. Moshe's argument was, I can't do it. You know why? My older brother Aaron, till now, has been the leader. If his younger brother is going to usurp him, he's going to be the one to be the leader. I'll cause him pain. I can't do that. Now the altar points out, think of Moshe's argument. God is coming to tell you you're the best man for the job to take the Jews out of Egypt. For the past 210 years, the Jews have been suffering absolute misery, torture, at the hands of the Egyptians. This is one of the most important tasks in Jewish history. Please, you're the best man, take the Jews out. That's your mitzvah. That's the greatest mitzvah of all time. Yet, what's he concerned with? It's going to pain my brother Aaron. Furthermore, the altar points out, let's look at it from Aaron's perspective. Would it be righteous for him to have such feelings? You know, Moshe, you might be better than me for this job, but you'd be insensitive. I'm the older brother, after all. I've been the leader till now. That sounds like the most selfish feelings ever, especially in the realm of Jewish history. Of course, really, if Aaron came to Hashem, asked him, what should I do? Should I step aside? Of course you should step aside. So it will be a sensitivity that Aaron would have, a wrong sensitivity. Yet, and Hashem doesn't challenge Moshe on this point, the altar says this seems to be the correct approach, halach l'maisa, that one should, even in a scenario where you have a great thing to do, you're offered, but it will be insensitively hurt someone else's feelings, you can't do that. I've heard this pasuk in the halacha. You have Shaila's, you know, positions in the world of Rabbanus, Habatzah's Torah. You could take this position, you'd be the best man. But, you know, this is your, you grew up in the shul, and you're going to take over and push out the rav that was there by your bar mitzvah, was there by your wedding. You're going to push him out because the board wants to appoint you the rabbi? Look, if they pick an outsider to do that, that's one thing. But how could you, who grew up in the shul, be the one to do that? I've heard similar scenarios said, look, even though it's a tremendous opportunity in this, but if there's someone else to do it, how could you be the one to cause hurt? So perhaps in a situation like this, especially with, and Zilberstein himself says a svara, where the mother, you don't know how long this hakpada could be. Right now she's saying, when the father passes away, don't name a kid after me. Maybe a year from now, maybe 5 years from now, she won't feel that way. Unfortunately, maybe 5 years from now, she won't be in the picture either. So it's really just a scenario of, do I name the child right now? And perhaps there'll be future opportunities. 5 years down the line, you can still name the child. It's really just an issue of delaying a mitzvah in terms of a sensitivity. So I think we see from here today there are a lot of principles going on in these cases. And it's very not simple. Where exactly does the responsibility of Kivud Av V'Aim end? Does it end after they pass on or not? Any precedents? Does it, even where Kibbutz Alva Aim ends, there might still be another mitzvah, not to pain a parent? But definitely this idea from the altar of Slabotka, how far a person has to go. Even Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to give up this, to be the messenger of the Jewish people, if it might inflict maybe even unjustified pain on his brother Aaron. This is how far a Jewish person has to go to avoid another person having pain. Thank you very much for listening. Have a wonderful week.